Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Last hour, I was affectionately referring to my former state that I spent 10 years in as the People's Republic of Wisconsin. I've done that many times over the years, mainly because of the city of Madison. But gosh, lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, we have apparently a communist city much closer to St. Louis than Madison, Wisconsin, Edwardsville, Illinois. Congratulations, Edwardsville, Illinois, for your ban on plastic bags. You have saved the planet. I understand from Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker and the rest of the field today that the Edwardsville plastic bag ban has already increased the survivability that we have on the planet. It was 12 years, according to AOC. Now it's 12 years and one day. So we got an extra day just for Edwardsville. I think that's really cool. Thank you, Edwardsville, for doing something as nonsensical as this just to make yourself feel good. The one thing that was interesting in, look, plastic bags, are they a problem for the environment? Probably. Should we be focusing on plastic bags? No, we should not. Should we be charging a tax on plastic bags? That's what they're going to do. And this is going to come to you, too. Now, if you live in Missouri, I think you're safe. Well, if you live in St. Louis, you're screwed. Okay, in Kansas City. But if you live in the rest of the state, where people are halfway normal and aren't whack jobs, then I think that you're going to be okay and you won't have to deal with something like this. I first encountered this when I was in Hollywood. And there's this pretty cool little market right down from the hotel that I stay in. In fact, I think I'm going to be there this week. And they charge 10 cents a bag. Well, you go into a place and what do you say? Okay, just charge me, right? They want you to bring your own bags. Or I suppose, and this is one thing that was a little unclear to me, I guess you can have paper. Does Walmart have paper bags? Do they even offer those? I don't think they do, right? Well, this is maybe my favorite part of the story. And then this thing was unanimous, by the way. All seven aldermen spoke in favor of the ordinance, along with a Girl Scout, a Sierra Club member. No one spoke out against the ordinance. This is from the Belleville News Democrat. Nobody. Aldermen thanked Bring Your Own for its hard work and business leaders for constructive criticism that led them to make changes. So what they're not doing is this is not going to affect small businesses. Because apparently small businesses can harm the environment as much as they want to. You want to put the hurt on the convenience of people who go to Lowe's or Walmart or the big box stores. Evil corporations is what we're trying to focus on here. And I love that the one alderman says, oh, we wouldn't perceive this as a tax, really. It truly isn't a tax. No, it truly is a tax. Let's just be clear about something. This is a tax. And the businesses get to keep the money. I'd market this deal if I were them. Here's my idea for Lowe's and Walmart and anyone else. Start buying commercials. I'll endorse you right here to make money off of plastic bags. So you want to communicate to the people in Edwardsville and the surrounding communities. Look, we want your money. We still got your bags. We're going to give you bags. Maybe we'll do a 2-for-1 deal. Can you do that with this ordinance? 2 bags for 10 cents. We'll run a weekend. No, that maybe not. That might get people in trouble here. It very well might. That is a bad idea. Oh, what's Reardon? Who cares? Who cares what they do in Edwardsville? They're trying to save the damn environment. You don't care about it at all. We're going to be gone. Your kids, your grandkids, gone. 12 years. Zapped from the planet. But then you think about this. Ward, I had no idea Edwardsville was this kooky. Honest to God. I have friends up there. What's going on? Were these the rejects from the city of St. Louis? They decided to move up to Edwardsville? Ward 3 Alderwoman Janet Stack got a big round of applause at the meeting when she suggested that the city go even further. This is why you oppose things like this, okay? Just so you know, if you're not caught on up until this point, this is exactly why you take a stand when they're trying to do something like this. And by the way, it's going to come here to St. Louis. You know it is. They probably already tried it. She suggested the city go even further, starting with restrictions on single-use water bottles and drinking straws. You know, they did this when I was in California. They don't let you have to have paper straws, and they're not very good, actually. And they realized overseas in England they did this, too. And the straws were, like, falling apart. They couldn't even drink their drinks. It's all in the effort to save the planet. This is a serious question. For those of you who are environmental whack jobs out there, I get these every once in a while. There's one dude out there, and you know he's probably listening right now because he always listens. He sends me these big, thick packets of environmental propaganda about climate change. I throw them out right away, but I do recycle them. I want that clear. I tear them up, and I put them in the recycle bin here at Entercom St. Louis. So I'm doing my part when those of you try to propagandize. But let's be honest, those of you who think the Earth is going to go away, and I'm all for doing smart things to reduce waste and help the planet. Why wouldn't you be? Clean air, it's a good thing. Clean water, that's a really good thing. So we should do these things. But I don't really support banning plastic bags or plastic straws or any of this nonsense, because it's just a cosmetic fix that makes them feel good in Edwardsville. This is not helping the environment even one millionth of 1%, especially out in Edwards. At least California and, you know, the coast, they can make the case that it's hurting the wildlife in the oceans. And I think even 60 Minutes did a story about all the plastic that's floating across the, in that big, what's that big thing called? The big island of trash that's just floating in the Pacific. So it is an issue, but wow, Edwardsville, Illinois. I thought we knew ye. Apparently not. 313 at the Voice of St. Louis. Plenty of other stuff to get to this afternoon, including, some of the other stuff that's getting crazy out there is the gender indoctrination. And I have yet another story about a male, a biological male, that has won a big cycling event as a woman. We'll get to that here a little bit this hour. Also, we have an audio cut of the day. And my friend, music writer Tim Summer, who is with Rock and Roll Globe, we talk music quite a bit. And he, you know, it's interesting. Tim is not on my side politically, but he has confessed that he's very, very angry about the PC culture that's out there in music, going so far as to say it's killed rock and roll. So he's coming up a little bit later this afternoon on KMOX as well.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Well, I mentioned common sense, which is apparently we've lost the will to use common sense in this country on so many fronts, especially with the guy. I recounted this story before the end of the hour. Black security guard, Madison, Wisconsin. Student calls him the N-word. Now, as a black student, it really shouldn't matter. They have a zero tolerance policy. He says back to the student, don't use that word, but he uses the word. He gets fired. Upside down. The world is upside down. Then you have this. Now, when I'm going to do a topic like this, because I'll get accused of being bigoted and homophobic and all these things, I will tell you, it's interesting because I have many gay friends across the country. They don't all agree on politics, and they don't all agree on this gender nonsense either. There are the very militant, activist gay friends that I have, maybe former friends, because I have one friend in New York who doesn't like my position on this, and apparently after we've been friends for 35 years, he doesn't want to have any part of me anymore, but that's another story. And I'm at the point where I don't care if people are going to be that open-minded or close-minded about these things. So let's just talk fairness here. Rachel McKinnon is a cyclist, was born with a penis, biological male, is now a woman, transitioned to a woman, won the Women's World Championship of Cycling on Saturday, set a women's world record in the qualifying event. She's a professor at the College of Charleston. She won the same event last year. In a Friday interview with Sky News, Rachel McKinnon said that attempts to level the playing field for women's sports by discriminating against transgender athletes was the equivalent of denying their human rights. She says, all my medical records say female. My doctor treats me as a female person. My racing license says I'm a female, but people who oppose my existence still want to think of me as a male. So if we want to say that I believe you're a woman of all society, or for all society, except for this massive central part that is sport, then it's not fair. Now, what's not fair, Rachel, and I don't understand how people can see this, is that you're taking, let's talk about smaller kids and younger kids in particular, because this is where I think it really plays out in high schools and maybe even junior highs and grammar school. So this is a piece that was written by a woman named Cheryl Radikowski, and her daughter is named Alana Smith. She's in Connecticut. Female athlete, and there is a ongoing Title IX investigation with the U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights because of what I'm about to tell you. So here's what Cheryl Radikowski says, and this plays in with the transgender athlete that beat all the other women because she was born with a penis and is physically stronger and will continue to be physically stronger, but thinks it's fair that she can go in and pummel the rest of the female athletes. So that's fair, because everyone else is evil and discriminatory. Cheryl Radikowski says, men are stronger than women. Boys are faster than girls. An influx of hormones doesn't undo these realities. Study after study has reaffirmed this basic fact about what it means to be human. Most recently, Swedish scientists followed 11 biological men whose testosterone was dramatically decreased due to cross-sex hormone treatments over a year. Even when the men's testosterone levels matched that of biological women, the men's competitive advantages remained almost fully intact, with muscle size and bone density remaining virtually unchanged in some and decreasing by only 5% in others. I love that liberals love settled science, but yet when presented with settled science like this, which actually is settled, they don't like it. While such studies are crucial evidence, Cheryl Radikowski wrote, in the debate over biologically male athletes competing in girls' sports, I don't need to list all of them here. You can Google that for yourself. But if you can't Google my front row seat as a mother of a high school athlete, she says, but you can't, not but if you can, but you can't Google my front row seat as a mother of a high school athlete who has been beaten out by a biological male athlete who identifies as female, one who has not undergone hormone therapy or gender reassignment surgery. In other words, still has a penis, and who competed a year earlier as a male. My daughter, Alana, now a sophomore, is a rising star in our home state of Connecticut. As a freshman, she led her high school team to its third straight team championship in the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference by winning the 100 meter, the 200 meter, and the 400 meter in one of the most dominant individual performances in meet history. She was an integral component in the team's first place finish in the state open, and in smashing a pair of records at the New England Championships in Maine. Alana has devoted countless days, nights, and weekends to training. She pushes herself to shave mere fractions of a second from her race times. That's what runners do, right? Swimmers, same thing. Yet she positions herself at the starting line knowing that even with all the training and with her best effort, the odds are against her, the numbers are against her, and that fairness doesn't really exist. This is what we're teaching our kids. This is what I'm going to have to teach my daughter now, apparently. Thank God she doesn't live in Illinois, because if you lived in Illinois outside of Chicago, or I guess the whole state, this is some of the gender nonsense that's out there is going to be mandated that your students are indoctrinated with it, even though that's really not the proper role for a teacher when it comes to kindergarten, first, second grade students. I'll allow for some differences when kids are older, but the curriculum that I've seen in the state of Illinois doesn't only affect the older kids, affects the preschoolers and the kindergartners as well, right? So what Alana's mom says, since 2017, our state's high school athletic conference has allowed biological boys to compete against girls. It's enough that they subjectively identify as female. That's all they have to do is say that I'm a female. This is not made up. This is not fake news. This is what's happening in high schools all across this country. So since 2017, when they did this, two biological boys have won 15 women's track championships, titles held by 9 different girls in 2016. Not only that, the same two biological boys have taken away more than 50 chances for girls to compete at the next level of competition, running these girls right off track and forcing them to be spectators in their own sport. Hey, how about this for a Me Too moment? Fellow lefties. Not fellow lefties out there who are yelling at your radio at me being bigoted and homophobic. How about that for treating women? Let's treat women like that. That's a great idea. It's a great lesson for high school students in particular. As a parent, she wrote, it's gut-wrenching to know that no matter how hard my daughter works to achieve her goals, she will lose athletic opportunities to a pernicious gender ideology. Left unchecked, this ideology will in the long run eliminate fair play for all biological females in sports. That is not an exaggeration. That is absolutely factual. As we're seeing in Connecticut, a biological boy's subjective sense of his gender doesn't cancel out his physical advantage over girls. Lest I be assailed by the PC crowd, she said. This has nothing to do with white privilege. Oh man, we better get into some white guilt here. If we don't do that, it's not going to cover all the bases. My daughter is a beautiful young woman of color. Oh, look at that. That's uncomfortable, right? Damn it. If she were only white. Nor is it about lifestyle. I believe love is love. It's about fairness of play. Exactly. I don't care one rip. And I got a nice letter from someone out there. Maybe she's listening. Who took issue with my vigilant stand on the gender pronoun crap that's going on out there. And I don't really care if her issue wrote about her daughter, who is non-binary, I guess is the word. That's fine. I'm sure you love your daughter. I'm sure that I would like your daughter if I met her. I have nothing against people who want to, I guess, claim whatever they want to be. But this is really ridiculous and out of control. And no one apparently is willing to stand up and say, it's got to stop. And I don't know what the answer is here. Once the genie's out of the bottle on some of this stuff, what do you do? Well, Cheryl Radikowski says, look, our daughters, of which now I have one, so I'm concerned, deserve better than to have their athletic opportunities stolen from them. We worked decades. You know, I remember watching this documentary on the Boston Marathon 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and I was stunned. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s. I was stunned to know that women couldn't even run in the Boston Marathon until when? The late 70s? I have to ask Amy Mark scores that. That there were women who would sneak in to that race. That was within my lifetime. That's how women were treated. It's horrifying when you think about it, but there's evolution. Same thing with race, even though many people want to claim there's been no progress when it comes to race. There's been a lot of progress. Been a lot of progress when it comes to treating women. I believe there could be a lot of progress with transgender athletes and students and people in the future, but this is not the way to do it. Taking away and ripping out the opportunities and the possibilities for girls who have worked hard in athletes. I have some nieces that have excelled at soccer. My wife was a soccer player, collegiate soccer player in NAIA. What is the motivation to even work hard if a biological male is taking those opportunities from the girls? And again, in this particular situation, it's even more ridiculous. I don't know about the woman who won the cycling event. I have to check on that, Rachel McKinnon, if she's actually someone who has female or male body parts. I tend to be one of those people that think that that's something that makes a difference here. But in this particular case, all the student has to do is say, you know what? I'm going to identify as she, her. Which, by the way, for those of you interested, if you go to my Twitter profile, at the top of the page, you click on that, you will see that my gender pronouns are listed there. You might not be happy with the way that I listed them, but I did list them because I wanted to catch some people's attention. On another note, separate but related, somebody sent me the application for being on the board of Freeholders, which, for the love of God, I don't know why anyone would want to do that, but let's say that you do. The second question is preferred pronoun. You have to tell people what your preferred pronoun is. That's where we are. So, look, this is, it's nonsense. I don't know where we go. Cheryl says, Alana and a small but steadily growing number of courageous young women have stepped forward and publicly called upon the federal government to restore the fair playing field they deserve. It's why more than 30,000 Americans have signed off at the hashtag fair play petition. I'm going to sign that myself. I encourage you to do that, to keep girls like Alana from ending up on the sidelines. But she even says, Cheryl says, it's not a battle that she sought, but rather the contest that take place on the track. That's what she'd rather focus on. But when her daughter's dreams are at stake, she can't stay silent, and neither should you, is her advice. And I would agree. That's why I talk about
these
issues.
You are fake news.
That is not something that should have happened. Dave, did you even hear that? Once again, the machine just said, Donald Trump just yelled at me, you are fake news. And it I didn't even touch anything. The president has inhabited the building, I guess. All right, anyway, enough on that. 3:30 at KMOX.
We've got football.
To
tonight at 6:30. It's the Patriots and Jets, and you can hear it here on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
That was weird, only because as I was saying something, I heard the president say this to me.
You are fake news.
And he really didn't mean that, because I was talking about something that was truthful. But Dave, I'm telling you, talking to my producer, I just barely... Let's see if I can do this with the... I'm going to see if I can reproduce what I did with the paper swiping.
Stupid question. Oh,
it is. It's the paper. Listen to that. There's the... I can do that. I'm just doing that with the corner of a piece of paper right now. Look at that. So that's my mistake. Host error. Well, I'd like to get, let's see, before the end of the hour, we might get into this Tulsi Gabbard-Hillary Clinton feud. That's a fun one. We have audio cut of the day coming up, and then we're right into Total Information PM this afternoon. Tim Sommer back with me this afternoon. We talk music quite often on this particular show, and he's with Rock and Roll Globe. And it's, well, let's just have this conversation with Tim. First of all, Tim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Haven't had you on a little bit. It's fair to say that you and I mean, you, I'm a conservative. You are not a conservative. So we don't agree. You've sensed this from listening, you know, when I've kind of led into other topics and stuff, that I don't have the same politics as you, right?
Yeah. But you know what? I'm open-minded.
Yeah,
I'm
one of course.
I'm one of those left-wing people who like to embrace. I like to hear everybody out. I feel everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I also feel that you can be best friends with someone of an entirely different political spectrum.
As do I. And I would probably have not very many friends at all if I didn't have those friendships. But I bring it up because the one thing that you're, I think, somewhat passionate on, and I am too, is the PC culture. And I believe maybe the last time I had you on, you heard me talking about what was happening with the Saturday Night Live situation, which, you know, I've only seen a few comedians, and they're good ones, like Chappelle and Bill Burr, basically say, look, this is comedy, and we got to stand up for some of this stuff. And you think some of the same things are happening in music right now?
Absolutely. I just feel that PC culture, you know, you have to make the difference between words that incite people and words that merely, you know, entertain people or inform people. You know, people do not run to the ramparts because they hear someone saying a bad word. That has been proven time and time again. Let me ask you a question. What are the very first words on the very first Beatles album? The first release, the first album the Beatles ever released. What are the first words?
I don't know the answer to that question.
She was just 17. You know what I mean.
Oh, okay. Boy, yeah, that's now, a Me Too moment right there, right?
Did people hear that and said, how many child rapists, how many people who were engaged in underage sex were inspired by the Beatles? There must be millions and millions of them out there.
Right, right.
Likewise,
yeah.
Just about 2 years later, a very, very well-known Beatles song has the lyric, "I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than see you with another man." Do you think the Beatles could get away with that in 2019?
No, and I can't remember what the song was that I was listening to. There was a song that I came across recently, and I meant to remind myself of this. And I was driving one night, I think back from Columbia when I went up to see a football game, and I thought, Dave, do you remember that? I told you, Klein, about that song, and I can't remember what it was. I'm like, you got to pull this song. We might have even done it, and I didn't get to it because I thought in 2019, you probably couldn't put this song out.
Yeah. You know, and any number of Chuck Berry songs, but that's a whole different story. What I'm saying is there's a big difference between hate speech and speech that's politically incorrect. And politically incorrect speech, it's like, you know, all those hearings they had in the early 1980s about whether pornography incited rape and violence. And you know what? It didn't. They've proven that time and time again. Likewise, you can have words out there that, you know, you can make fun. I'm not saying that I'm going to do it. I'm not saying that I'm about to do it. But you could make fun of an Asian person's accent without the world collapsing.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there's satire. There's satire and parody that used to be a pretty important part of entertainment and television shows. And now I even hear people that I genuinely like and respect that have backed off a little bit and said, maybe we're going too far. And I'm shocked by it.
I'll tell you something, and I think this is very, very telling. A few weeks ago in Nashville, I had my first ever visit to the Grand Ole Opry, which is something I highly recommend for everyone.
I've never been
everyone
there.
Should go out.
Yeah. I had a friend that went and saw Wilco over the weekend. I'm so bummed I've never been there.
You know, so the evening, the Grand Ole Opry is structured that there are 8 acts during the evening, each of whom play for 8 or 10 minutes, 2 songs or so. This night I saw the Grand Ole Opry, and there are some major stars playing that night, like Crystal Gayle and people like that. The only act that got a standing ovation, the only act of the night that got a standing ovation, was a comedy team called Williams and Reed, who have been together for 51 years. They're also known as, and this is what they call themselves, this is not what I'm labeling them, they're also known as the Indian and the White Guy. And their entire set is made up pretty much of them making fun of people's conceptions of what Caucasians are and what Indians are. And I had a revelation after seeing Williams and Reed. I said to myself, you know what? You can be politically incorrect without being mean-spirited. And people have totally forgotten about that. The world did not change for the negative, for instance, because Jerry Lewis, to use an example, often parodied, they say people of different cultures.
Well, Rickles would be my prime example, and I was a huge Rickles fan. Don Rickles could not exist in this world.
There is mean-spirited stuff, and that's the stuff that may make people go, oh, I don't like Jews. I'm going to go after a Jew. How much comedy, how much politically incorrect humor actually incites people to do harm? I don't even think that idea exists. So I'm saying there has to be an enormous distinction between hate speech and stuff that's purely politically correct, incorrect. And you know, as do I, that so much of the humor we grew up with, whether it be the first 20 years of Saturday Night Live, whether it be Monty Python, whether it be Don Rickles, whether it be Jerry Lewis, did I mention Monty Python? Yes, already I probably did. So much of that was based in ridiculing, in people who made fun of themselves, made fun of their own stereotypes. Monty Python were upper-class Englishmen, and about two-thirds of their humor was based around making fun of being an upper-class Englishman.
Absolutely. That's right.
Yeah, so I'm saying you have to draw this line. I'm going to use this word again. You have to draw this line between being mean-spirited and being politically incorrect. You know, and politically incorrect humor is, by and large, not hate speech. Likewise, people can see people on television and then not think, oh, I'm going to imitate those people's acts. And again, I use Beatles for that as an example of that. She's just 17, you know what I mean? That didn't incite people to have underage underage sex. It's a concept that it doesn't exist.
So listen.
I don't think using the Saturday Night Live thing for an example, I don't think if someone did a routine where they imitated an Asian person, do you think there is, if 10 million people saw that routine as opposed to say 20 or 200, if 10 million people saw that routine, do you think one person in the audience would go out and do a harm against an Asian person?
No, I don't. And you know what's funny? What's not funny? I'm going to say it's not funny. So while we're talking here, I pulled up, I just kind of did a random search on Google just to see if people had written about this. And at first I got excited. There was a USA Today column by these two guys, Maeve McDermott, Patrick Ryan, 20 politically incorrect songs that would be wildly controversial today. And I thought they were going to take the stance that we're taking here. But no, they have a list of songs, and some of this is, if I were going to tell you here that it's, you know, true, you'd think I'm just completely making this up.
Right.
For example, they mention, let's see here. Well, Brown Sugar is out there because they say Gold Coast slave ship bound for cotton fields sold in the market in New Orleans. Scarred old slaver knows he's doing all right. Hear him whip the woman just around midnight. So Mick Jagger has changed the words to that song, and they criticize it for aging poorly. Well, that's going to happen sometimes over the course of decades. But then they go further. They go into, this is actually beyond belief. Do You Know It's Christmas? Remember that from Band-Aid?
Yeah.
In 1984. And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life, where nothing ever grows, no rain or rivers flow. Do they know it's Christmas time at all? That was one of the biggest philanthropic efforts in music history. These two people who wrote this column say, well, possibly the most culturally insensitive Christmas songs of all time. The Band-Aid supergroup.
I mean, look, this goes beautiful, empathetic. You know, look at it this way. Two of the biggest hits of the 1970s of the Rolling Stones and Lou Reed both used the words cultured girls. Okay? Do you think anyone was made racist by that? The biggest hit Mott the Hoople, who are one of my all-time favorite bands, the biggest hit Mott the Hoople ever had, all the way from Memphis, uses the word spade in it as a way to describe African-Americans. I'm not going to do that. I don't think anyone who heard the song was inspired to do it. It was a descriptive thing that was part of the song. And I'll give you another example of this thing and how this is sort of, you know, I don't know if you follow this story. It's from a few years back. It turned out the biggest, one of the biggest British, actually I'll say English, one of the biggest English television personalities of all time turned out to be a serial rapist. One of the greatest serial rapists in British history. And for some reason, Jimmy Savile, that's his name, Sir Jimmy Savile, because he was a friend of the royal family. He was the equivalent, he was sort of a cross between Dick Clark and Johnny Carson. And he turned out to be one of the most prolific serial rapists in British history. Yet the show that he hosted for decades, I think for 30 or 40 years, Top of the Pops, which was the most famous music show in British history, that was the show that he hosted. I doubt anyone watching that show thought, was negatively affected by being in his presence. Likewise, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, I still love listening to Gary Glitter, whose songs are played at football stadiums all over America, right?
Right, yeah.
Now, I do not approve. The fact that I like Gary Glitter is not a sign that I approve of what he did.
These are important things you're saying, and I only have to cut you off because we're short on time, but I'm glad that you say that. And this list that I mentioned from USA Today, it's just a head scratcher. Here's one. Tonight's the Night. Rod Stewart, Don't Say a Word, My Virgin Child, Just Let Your Inhibitions Run Wild. Why It Wouldn't Fly Today. In case the lyrics to this number one hit weren't cringe-inducing enough, Try Not Feeling Icky watching its video. And these are people who are seriously writing. It sounds like parody, but it's not. They mentioned Illegal Alien by Genesis. Well, you can't say, you can't even say Illegal Alien anymore, so that song's off.
And I'm saying there's no connection between these words and behavior. And I think that's the main thing that I'm getting at. Is there any connection between either the artists who sang their songs and their behavior in real life? No one would accuse Mick Jagger of being... Mick Jagger, as I said, uses the phrase colored girls in one of his most famous songs. And I don't think anyone...
No.
Did he ever act racist in real life? There is no connection between hearing those songs and then going on affecting people's behavior. For instance, I don't like that Lynyrd Skynyrd flies the Stars and Bars, the Confederate flag at their shows, or that they used it in their artwork. But I like their music. I don't approve of doing that, but it's not going to stop me from listening to their music.
Tim, I got to cut you off. You make excellent points. And these are conversations about these things that we'll have in the future as well. So I appreciate coming back here this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
All right, take care.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, we'll keep it light here. It's sponsored by the Good Feet Store, Pain Relief and Comfort to fit any budget. We'll give a shout out to the Illini fans as they are participants in a huge upset over Wisconsin. 31-point favorites, and I love this call here at the end of the game.
Badgers have no timeouts. They can't stop it. McCourt for the win. In the air. It is up, and it is good! Yes! Good!
Let's go!
Upset.
Let's go, baby!
Upset in Champaign. The Illini win it 24-23 right down the middle. And that is a happy mob.
That is, I love that call. Brian Barnhart and Martin O'Donnell doing the color there as the Illini upset the Badgers Saturday afternoon. That's your audio cut of the day. Total Information PM is coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.